Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, Alicia Malone with Scott Movie Mance and the Schmoes Know. This is Profiled. In-depth spotlights on the greatest filmmakers and artists in motion picture history.
Hello, profilers. I think if you were just watching then, you saw a bit of the dance that we do every time the opener comes on. This is what we do.
This is what we do. We like to start, and then the music kind of fades out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, this is a great day. Not only are we profiling the legendary two-time Oscar winner, Jane Fonda.
Yep.
But after being gone for 10 days, she is back. My life is complete again. Alicia Malone is back in town from a holiday in Japan.
But so, I didn't miss an episode of Profile.
No,
so
she didn't.
It's like I never left.
So, domo arigato for being back in Hollywood to do Profiles.
Thank you. Arigato gozaimasu.
Just in time for a legend, a screen legend, who I feel like has gone underappreciated. An actress who was way ahead of her time,
mm-hmm.
a producer, an activist, and a fitness guru, who was way, way, way ahead of her time. Of course, we're talking about Jane Fonda.
She is one of my personal heroes, not only for the work she does for women in film. You know, she co-founded the Women's Media Center. She also sits on the board of V-Day, a charity that I support, which is against violence against women. And a lot of my proceeds from the t-shirts that we sell, I give straight to V-Day, and she's on the board. She's, of course, also a great actress, an author, you mentioned, producer as well, an activist, political activist. She's got two Best Actress Oscars, an Emmy, a Tony nomination, an honorary Palme d'Or Cannes Film Festival, and, as you said, the all-time top-grossing home workout tape. And let me tell you, I did it the other day because I downloaded it with all the other movies on my Amazon Kindle, and I did the workout, and it's still really tough.
It still holds up, doesn't
kicks
it?
My butt. Yeah.
Just like the movies and the performances.
For sure.
Those workout videos, I mean, listen, Jane Fonda was way ahead of her time. She was a strong woman pushing for things, not just beliefs, but also for roles and films that she produced through her production company at a time when it was even more rare than it is now, and it shouldn't be rare at all, but she was a trailblazer, a groundbreaker, and she always took on roles that were close to her heart, strong women, and again,
strong and strong, complex women, strong, vulnerable women. That was the thing that I really noticed when I rewatched her films, was how she played these characters that were allowed to be all things. You know, they weren't stereotypical female characters, not all of them anyway, and particularly the ones that she produced. And I feel like a lot of the movies had really strong issues that she produced.
They did. And these are movies that still pack a punch. Even a movie that you think would feel dated is even more relevant now than when it came out in 1980. Oh, man, I can't wait to talk to you about this movie. I'm sitting watching this movie, and you'll probably guess what it is. But I'm telling you, Alicia, when I was watching this movie, I was like sitting there watching on my couch, relaxing, and then I sat up and I went, oh boy, we're going to have a lot to talk about with this.
Mm-hmm.
But the amazing thing, too, about Jane Fonda, she took 14 years off from acting. She basically retired in 1991, came back with a vengeance in 2005 with Monster in Law, comedic role, but she's also done amazing work on television in Newsroom and on Grace and Frankie with her friend Lily Tomlin.
Yeah, amazing.
She made that movie we're going to talk about very shortly with.
Yep.
But, you know,
she's a TED speaker as well. She's an author. Yeah, she's great.
So what the hell took us so long to do Jane Fonda?
I know.
The question.
And I think she is really underrated. It wasn't until I started doing this research that I realized that she's been nominated for 7 Oscars.
7.
I knew she'd won some, but and she'd be nominated some. But when you see 7 in a row, you think, wow, she is one of the most important actresses we have today.
And when you watch, definitely watching the films again, maybe one of them that I had never even seen before that wasn't on our Fast 5, but I still watched it anyway, you just go, holy cow, if there's any career that needs to be reevaluated and reappreciated, it is Jane Fonda's.
Such an interesting life. A wonderful life.
A wonderful life indeed.
Yes. And so it's time to look at our wonderful life video, our bio of Jane Fonda. Roll it.
Actress, writer, producer, activist, sex symbol, fitness guru, Oscar winner. Jane Seymour Fonda was born on December 21st, 1937 in New York City. Her mother, Frances Seymour Brokaw, was a New York socialite, and her father was legendary actor Henry Fonda. Her brother is actor Peter Fonda, and her niece is actress Bridget Fonda. After a brief modeling career, which saw her grace the cover of Vogue, twice actually, Fonda switched to acting and studied under the great Lee Strasberg at the famed Actors Studio. Her stage work in the late 50s led to a burgeoning film career in the 60s, starting with 1960's Tall Story, which co-starred Anthony Perkins. Fonda averaged two movies a year until her breakthrough performances in 1965's Cat Ballou, 1966's Any Wednesday, and 1967's Barefoot in the Park, the latter of which co-starred her frequent collaborator, Robert Redford. But if 1968 sci-fi spoof Barbarella established Fonda as a sex symbol, it was 1969's They Shoot Horses, Don't They? That established her as an Oscar contender for the very first time. Over the next decade, Fonda starred in one great classic after another, winning two Academy Awards for Best Actress for 1971's Clue and 1978's Coming Home. She was nominated five other times.
Wow. And special thanks to the Pit Boss for lending your voice as always.
Go
and JTE,
Ken,
who recorded that over at Screen Junkies, Defy for us.
So oh, thanks, guys.
We appreciate
thanks,
that.
Guys. We love Screen Junkies. Well, you know, this is an actress who was very driven.
Uh-huh.
And she is, you know, she actually said, quote, "When I start down a path, I know it's the right path. I go with all of me." And when you look at her performances and when you look at her side project with the fitness stuff, it is amazing that she really does put everything into everything that she does.
For sure. Yeah. She researches all her roles. She really goes for it all. And I believe we have the same first blood when it comes to Jane Fonda.
Let's hear yours.
9 to 5.
9 to 5.
Working hard, make
a living. Now, I know you did not see this in the cinema.
No.
So when did you see it?
I didn't. I saw it in the 80s. I think it was more towards the late 80s because I became obsessed with Big Business, which also starred Lily Tomlin.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Lily Tomlin and Bette Midler, and I loved that movie. So then I started looking through all the Lily Tomlin movies,
yeah,
and I saw it 9 to 5, and I thought that sounded kind of familiar. And I watched it, and I loved it so much, and I hadn't seen it since then. So I remember just seeing it once as a kid, enjoying it, and then when I rewatched it, as we'll get to, I have a new appreciation for that film.
No question.
But I thought
it
was really funny. It has almost a cartoonish quality to it. So watching it as a kid, even though it's kind of dark, it still was hilarious. And Dolly Parton, she's so cool, and of course Jane, lovely Jane.
This was my first blood as well.
In the cinema,
I did see this in the cinema.
Yay.
It came out in 1980. At the same time, my parents took me to see The Shining.
It's like a palate cleanser as 9 to 5.
Absolutely it was. But what I remember, of course, was the song.
Yep.
But I also remember this was a very big deal at the time, showing three women, executive assistants more or less, taking revenge against their boss.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a film that sort of segues quite nicely into our Fast Five.
Yeah, so Fast Five at number 5. Let's hear that audio.
Where are you going? Why are you driving so fast? What is the matter with you?
9 to 5.
Released on December 19th, 1980. One Oscar nomination, mm-hmm, for Best Original Song for Dolly Parton, who made her feature film debut with this movie.
Yep.
It's directed by Colin Higgins, who also directed a movie called Foul Play. And this is a landmark film, a controversial film. And let's give it a high five for a movie that is more relevant now than ever.
That's
what did you think
scary.
Watching this movie again?
I don't even think we should high five that. I think we should say, like, why is this still relevant?
Yeah,
that it's
right.
Still talking about these, like, sexist bosses and women, you know, who are struggling in the workplace and, you know, trying to get their opinions heard. Of course, not everyone's like that, but I related to a lot of the themes in this, watching it now as an adult versus when I was a child. I love that it's based on an idea from Jane Fonda herself. She said, "I've always been attracted to those 1940s films with three female stars. It was originally going to be a drama, but Fonda thought it might be too feminist and a bit too preachy if it was a drama, so they made it into a comedy. Of course, she also wanted to work with Lily Tomlin, who is so great at comedy. And Jane did a lot of research for the film. She talked to a lot of women to get their stories. And she asked Colin Higgins to write a screenplay showing that you can run an office without a boss, but you can't run an office without the secretaries.
Well, that's true. But the chemistry between these three ladies, Jane Fonda, Dolly Parton, Lily Tomlin, really does make the film
so
the scene
different.
Where they all get high. It's such a, you know, one of those pop cultural movie moments.
Uh-huh.
They all have different dreams of getting back
different
against
fantasies.
Daphne Coleman plays Franklin M. Hart Jr., who is, quote, a
sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical
bigot. Yes.
Almost got it right.
We almost got it right. But this was a film that was a very big deal. It holds up very well. I mean, unfortunately, it's timely now for better or worse, mostly worse. A look at sexism, ageism, diversity, equal pay for women, you name it. This movie touches on all of those things. And by the way, her production company, this was the third of six movies that she produced through that company.
Amazing.
And even the New York Times, Vincent Canby, loved the film, saying there's some sort of lesson to be learned from the fact that the biggest laughs in 9 to 5 depend on enthusiastic, unabashed sexism. Whoa.
And I love the three different characters because they are so different from each other. I love how they all band together in this kind of evil plan. But even the boss, I mean, he is all those things, but he's also got that likable quality about him, too. So
Daphne Coleman,
yeah.
It's also the same year, I think, he made, or maybe the following 2 years later, he did Tootsie.
Yes.
You know, which is sort of almost like the same kind of role, very
chauvinistic. Yeah, so it's like you enjoy seeing him all, you know, strung up and being tortured, but at the same time, you're rooting for him a little bit as well. I mean, I just love these three ladies and the way they put their minds together, and then they really take on the world.
You know, Jane Fonda, she's better known for her serious dramas, but she's very funny. If you go back to, like, Barefoot in the Park.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, Fun with Dick and Jane, and definitely 9 to 5, and later on Monster in Law. Yeah, she's funny.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't appreciate her with the comedy, but they will now.
And you definitely can see, you know, this was the start of Dolly Parton's film career, like you said, and you can definitely see that that charismatic quality that she has, and she really draws you in with her personality. I love that.
Well, what I love is that the profilers love this movie as well. Our very loyal profiler, Lynette Charles, says, "This is such a fun movie. Three diverse secretaries take revenge on their sexist, egotistical boss, played by Daphne Coleman. Jane Fonda convincingly plays Judy, a recently divorced housewife who ventures out into the workforce. Lily Tomlin is Violet, the underappreciated supervisor who shows Judy the ropes. Dolly Parton is Southern gal Dora Lee. There are crazy antics, both fantasy and revenge. They abduct their boss and run the business themselves. The movie shows how bosses abuse their positions and power, which I think still occurs in this day and age." I'd just like to mention what a fantastic job you both do, Alicia and Scott. Love you both for it. Hashtag film geek. Hashtag profile for life.
Thanks, Lynette. She's always such a great supporter of us. Billy Polahan is another one who's a great supporter.
Yes,
and he's watching live right now on YouTube. Hi, Billy.
Hi, Billy.
He says, 9 to 5 was a film I heard about for a very long time, but I never got around to watching it until this. Profiles. Now having seen it, it's the most down-to-earth film about work I've had the chance to see. Everyone has had those days where they've wanted to kill their boss, and this film uses that concept the best way possible, but executes it to where they show the consequences if you did, or in this case think, you had axed him or her out. Being that this was the first Jane Fonda leading role I've ever seen, I had no idea what to expect, and I just couldn't believe how sexist and rude Daphne Coleman's Mr. Hart was to these hardworking women. I enjoy Jane Fonda, and thanks to Profiles, I found a new actress that I love to watch.
I love it.
Hashtag film geek, hashtag profile for life. That's so great. And I think Billy makes a good point that even though it is about women in the workplace, I think everyone, if you've had a terrible boss and you've had fantasies,
which is everybody,
then you can definitely relate to 9 to 5.
Regardless of the sex, the gender, whatever, this is something that everyone can relate to.
Sure.
And, you know, but the movie does touch on ageism, and I thought it was interesting. I read a quote from Jane Fonda that where she has embraced her mm-hmm. age versus being sort of afraid of it or you know, worried that it might affect her career.
I saw on an interview recently with Stephen Colbert, she says she now feels the happiest she ever has in her life, and she feels the youngest.
That's great. She actually was quoted as saying, aging is not what we used to think it was, where you peak at middle age. It's like ascending a staircase into growth, wisdom, well-being, and happiness.
Yeah.
So there you go. Absolutely. That's awesome.
Killing it.
Well, what is your right stuff? Very curious to hear about this one.
That was hard to choose because I was going to go with the fantasy sequence from 9 to 5 where they all picture the various ways that they would like to off Mr. Hart. Especially funny that scene because it ends up happening in real life. I thought that was really clever part of writing. But I went instead with the disco scene from Clute. Now, if you haven't seen Clute out there, you might not know which what I'm talking about, but Jane Fonda will talk about this film more, but she plays a call girl, Bree Daniels, and she gets caught up in this this creepy investigation.
Yep.
At one point, she sees an old former friend who has just fallen by the wayside with drugs and feeling very worthless. So she's shaken up by that. She runs out of the car away from Donald Sutherland, goes into this disco and sort of starts to put on the act again of, you know, being a call girl. And she goes up to one guy, she goes up to another guy, and then she ends up next to her old pimp, but she looks like a little girl. She looks so fragile and vulnerable in that moment. And then she turns around, she sees Donald Sutherland staring at her, and it's no worse words in that scene, but it says so much.
Who's the pimp?
It is
Roy Scheider. Wow. I totally forgot about that. This is 1971. My Right Stuff was a film, is from a film that I saw close to when it came out. It came out in 1978, but I actually watched it in an English class when I was in eighth grade. My English teacher was a big movie buff.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually saw Dr. Strangelove in his class.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I mean, had nothing to do
very
with English,
cool.
But it was very, very cool because I remember when we watched Dr. Strangelove and I remember when we watched Coming Home.
Yeah, Coming Home.
And for a 12-year-old to see that love scene.
Yes.
Between John Voight and Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
So what I remembered about it specifically.
John Voight plays a paraplegic war hero.
And this was one of the first times, if not the first time, a love scene was depicted between a paraplegic
mm-hmm.
and someone who was not. And at the start of when they're together, it was inevitable that this was going to happen. But she finally says, what do I do?
Yeah.
Because she's never been, you know, with someone like that, or
let
alone
okay?
me, was.
Yeah, exactly.
But just the intimacy of that scene is so romantic and sexy.
And real.
And honest.
Yes, very
and
honest.
And raw.
Yep.
And it is a scene that still holds up when watching it to this day. It's just a very, very powerful love scene. And among many, many great scenes from her movies.
I know. It was hard to pick just one.
Very hard. Well, let's just take a second to take care of some business here.
Business time.
So we're going to switch back and forth because usually I do it or Alicia does it.
Okay.
So we're going to trade. So I'm going to start by saying go to iTunes and go look for profiles and make sure you subscribe and very importantly, rate and review us on iTunes. We would love to get back on the top 10 list for film and TV on iTunes.
Yeah.
And we need these ratings anyway to survive. So please go to iTunes and subscribe to Profiles.
And hey, someone on YouTube just said that they want me to record their voicemail voice. So, you know, if you want to hear Profiles, you can hear our voices on iTunes, but you can see us on YouTube, youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. We are live every second Tuesday at 3 p.m. PST, or you can watch it anytime and make sure you catch up on previous episodes because these episodes don't date. So
no,
you can always
don't.
Come back to them, enjoy, watch some movies over Thanksgiving, come back and enjoy episodes of Profiles again.
Yeah, you got some time off for the holidays. Go back and watch our older episodes of Profiles. They hold up. They are still relevant. Make sure you go to our Facebook page, which is Profiles with Malone and Mance.
Uh-huh.
If you want to join in on the fun, if you want to rank our movies, to say what you love about our movies, to like our Facebook page so that you know who we're going to profile next, please go to our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance, and like our Facebook page. You will have the best time.
And if you would like to look as cool as we do in these fancy t-shirts, if you're watching this on YouTube, if you're not on iTunes, just imagine that we're wearing Profiles merchandise, which you can buy on teepublic.com/user/profiles. Mance is sporting the classic hashtag film geek, which is our most popular t-shirt. I am sporting the Profiles of Malone and Mance, Robert Zemeckis, Back to the Future
t-shirt.
Style.
Yes.
Thanks so much to our brilliant designers for helping us with this. And like I said, I donate my profits to the charity that Jane Fonda is on the board of, V-Day.
And I'm donating my profits to the same charity as well, because that is how we roll.
Thank you.
And also, very much, very important, make sure you follow us on Twitter.
Yes.
Drumroll,
oh,
please. At Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, because it's all about the pause.
And Daniel on YouTube says, seeing profiles on YouTube is great. Scott Mance is a handsome dude.
Oh, well, thank you.
There you go. Okay, well, let's keep moving through our Fast Five. At number four, let's hear it.
I don't think he's going to come back again.
I just don't want to be alone right now.
Wow, Clute. What a movie. Came out June 25th, 1971, directed by Alan J. Pakula. The name sounds familiar. He directed All the President's Men. Another paranoid thriller, just like this one, cost $2.5 million to make. Total box office was $8 million domestically. Two Oscar nominations, including Best Adapted Screenplay. One Oscar win, Best Actress for Jane Fonda. Her first Oscar for Best Actress. What did you think watching this movie again?
I was just struck at how vulnerable she is. That's a word I'm going to be using a lot when it comes to her performances.
Yep.
She's plays this character who is vulnerable, who is defiant, who is trying to be so many things. And what struck me the most about watching this again was just how layered her performance is.
Definitely.
And just how different she is in Clute too. Because I watched 9 to 5 and then I rewatched Clute. So it was just like a back-to-back completely different roles. Her as Bree Daniels, I mean, you know, you get the stereotype, hooker with a heart of gold, you know, but she's not that at all. She's a real person, and you see her struggling to feel worthy.
But when she's in her element, when she's doing her job,
she's acting
very, very confident.
In control.
Something that she said she loves. Mm-hmm. And when she starts to have feelings for John Clute, the private detective played by Donald Sutherland, she has to go to a therapist because she doesn't want the feelings. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know what to do with the feelings. But when she feels good about herself,
yep,
it is a sexy, confident performance and is absolutely the reason why she won the Oscar, because you mix that confidence and control with the vulnerability.
Because you go, which is the real her? I mean, is she just putting on a mask to get through this, and she gets self-esteem from winning over these guys, but then leaves and doesn't feel like she's worth anything more than just her body?
When near the beginning of the film, when she's with one of her clients and they're making love and she looks at her watch.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, I forgot about that scene.
It's like she just wants to win him over. And then she's like, okay, I'm done.
But it is a fearless performance.
She owns it.
She kills it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing. When you watch this movie, just watch the therapist scenes and know that they were improvised. They were all improvised. And Jane asked specifically for a female therapist in the role because she felt like Brie would open up more to another woman and also feel defensive as well, having to, you know, say why she enjoys her job. But just those scenes by themselves just show what an incredible performer she is. Jane Fonda has said, I hate to look at my movies because I always want to do them again. Clute is different. I nailed that.
Wow. And she knows it, and we knew it watching it. She just like absolutely nailed it. Now, when she went to the Oscars, she actually asked her father, the late great Henry Fonda, what she should say in her speech. So he told her to say, this is a great deal to say, but I'm not going to say it tonight. And when she was giving her Oscar acceptance speech, that was part of what she said.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
The Time magazine at the time, Jay Cox, said, "Fonda makes all the right choices here, from the mechanics of her walk and her voice inflection to the penetration of the girl's raging psyche. It is a rare, fantastic performance." Time magazine, 1971.
I just want to say welcome to Daylan Bonner, who is watching Profiles for the first time live on YouTube. And a lot of people haven't seen Clute or many of Jane Fonda's movies, so do yourself a favor and watch it. It definitely holds up. I was sucked into the story. It's a, you know, the director is known for his political thrillers, but this feels almost like a horror. It's like a horror thriller.
It does. Well, the music is very eerie. The music is really eerie. This is actually part one of Alan J. Pakula's unofficial paranoid thriller trilogy.
Yep.
The second one being The Parallax View, and of course the third one was All the President's Men, which is just
a career
topper.
But I think it feels different to the other two.
It definitely, yeah. I mean, it was like unofficial.
Yeah.
You know, it's never like, I'm going to make a paranoid thriller trilogy. But it is a film that is very intense and suspenseful, and the fact that the score is just so eerie. It is not the kind of movie that you think it is. Oh, she plays a call girl. Oh, I know what this movie's going to be. She seduces the private detective.
And she falls in love with him.
It's much deeper than that.
Much deeper than that. And because we got no love for Clute on our Profilers Facebook page, I want you guys to let us know once you see it. That's my challenge. Go watch Clute and then tweet us or write on our Facebook page and let us know what you think. We'd love to hear.
And I, you know, when we do a profile on someone who, like a lot of our fans and viewers or listeners, know about, yeah, that's cool and fun. But I think it's more rewarding for both of us when people watch a show like this. They go, you know, I've never seen one of Jane Fonda's movies.
And we're careful not to spoil things.
Absolutely.
So we give you just enough, but don't worry. You still got lots of surprises when you see these movies.
But more than any other profile we've done, episode 44 here, to be able to introduce people to Jane Fonda's career.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Would be such an honor.
It would be an honor.
Absolutely.
Well, she's got a lot of interesting trivia.
Oh, yeah.
I was sifting through it all. Hit me with one.
Okay, I'm going to hit you with one that she actually turned down Norma Rae.
Oh, wow.
Which earned Sally Field an Academy Award.
Well, I have one which I know you've written down as well, which was she was offered the role of Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. She turned that one down.
That also won an Oscar for its actress, Louise Fletcher.
Louise Fletcher, yeah.
Well, did you know that Jane and Henry Fonda are the only father-daughter couple to receive Oscars for lead roles?
In the same year, too.
In the same year?
Well, no, actually, they're the first father-daughter team to be nominated for an Oscar in the same year.
Oh, right. Okay, for On Golden
Pond.
Yes. Well, that's pretty cool.
Because she would have been supporting for On Golden Pond. Well, did you know that on Golden Pond, on the set, Michael Jackson visited Jane Fonda and apparently skinny dipped on set with her? So there you go.
That's very random trivia.
A little bit trivia.
But yeah, I'll take it. And did you know, speaking of musicians here, that Jane Fonda was taught how to play guitar by David Crosby?
Pretty cool. One last little bit that I didn't know until I started doing my research. Her production company, IPC Films, do you know what it stands for?
It stands for, I'm going to guess, Indochina Peace Campaign.
Yeah, good guess. Or you just read the notes that you've written down. Yeah, but that is correct. That is correct, Scott.
There we go. The answer I had it written down, I had to peek.
All right, well, let's go on to our Fast Five. Number three is...
I'm afraid of him.
Well, he's afraid of you, so you should get along fine.
Golden Pond
released in 1981, cost $15 million to make. Box office was $119.2 million domestically. It was the second highest grossing film of 1981 behind 1981. Can you guess?
18?
That was 82.
I'm close. Terrible with dates.
It is directed by Spielberg. It is Raiders of the Lost Ark. Very, very close.
I'm terrible at dates.
Directed by Mark Rydell, based on the play by Ernest Thompson, who wrote the screenplay. Mm-hmm. 10 Oscar nominations, including picture, director, supporting actress for Jane Fonda. 3 wins, best actor, Henry Fonda, best actress, Katharine Hepburn, and adapted screenplay. Watching acting talent on that level just makes your jaw hit the floor.
It does. And it reminds me that legends, they they're legends for a reason, if that makes sense. Like, I was watching Katharine Hepburn and Henry Fonda and then Jane Fonda as well, and just these three heavyweights of acting and the kind of nuances they bring to their characters and the different ways that they will say dialogue that you might not expect, and they make it all feel very natural and completely round out the characters. I was watching this on a bus to Mount Fuji in Japan, cool. Sitting next to my friend Lucy.
Lucy Armstrong.
Yeah, she's the best. I went to school with her and she looked over my shoulder. She was like, it looks like a boring film. They're just sitting on boats and talking. And I'm like, no, it could appear that way. But because of the characters and the acting, it is so much more than that. I mean, Jane had wanted to work with her father, Henry Fonda, for a long time. She'd hoped that working with him would kind of help mend a bit of their strained relationship. And I think it's that raw quality in those scenes. Sure. You can tell it feels so real. It's vulnerable. Again, vulnerable is going to be my key word. and also heartbreaking. There's that moment when he goes, I just don't think we like each other very much. And it's like, oh, to have your father say that to you.
And the tears in that scene were genuine because of the movie's just sort of mirrored in I don't want to say an exact way, but it depicted their own rift in real life. So the art was imitating life.
Yep.
But Jane Fonda purchased the rights to this so that her father could make it.
Yeah.
Now, when he won the Oscar for Best Actor, he wasn't at the Oscar ceremony. He was too ill to make it. So in accepting the Oscar on Henry Fonda's behalf, she said, I'll bet when he heard the news just now, he said, hey, ain't I lucky? As if luck had anything to do with it. And Henry Fonda died just 5 months later in August of 1982.
Oh, wow. I mean, they'll always have that movie together, which is really special. And Roger Ebert said that, you know, if we've heard that Jane and Henry had some problems, that they have in this story, does it make the movie simple gossip? No, not if the movie deals honestly with the problems as this does. And that's what I feel like. It could be a bit tabloidy because it's, you know, they're mirroring their real relationship, but no, because it's played so real, it really affects you.
You know, one of the things about watching movies again, whether it's for profiles or for anything, just to have gone that long without seeing On Golden Pond. I mean, I did see it when it came out in 81, but I mean, it was 12 or 13. So, what do you remember about that? And what kind of perspective do you have on film when you're that young anyway?
But watching now, it now, you can relate to it more with relationships with your own parents.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
And how you felt as a kid. You've got the boy who's 13 who's like stranded with these old people.
But also just watching acting talent at work like Henry Fonda and Katharine Hepburn and Jane Fonda in the same movie. Even Dabney Coleman,
Catherine.
You know, he wasn't caricature like he was in some of his other films. It was nice to see him play something real.
Yeah, but, he's still very funny.
And, you know, we didn't really get any comments for this movie either on our Facebook page, but there's a testament that just people just watch these movies. These are the greats. We are profiling these actors and actresses and directors for a reason. And these movies to make our Fast Five, it is, they're big reasons. So please watch Clute and watch On Golden Pond. Mm-hmm. These are great movies. And again, let us know what you think.
I mean, Jane has a fairly small role in On Golden Pond compared to Henry and Katharine, but man, she makes an impact.
And she also has an amazing body in this movie. Good God.
Oh, gosh, that workout tape really
does work, doesn't it? Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of other great movies that didn't make our Fast Five.
Yeah.
Let's go to the others. And there are a lot of others to touch base on. One of the first ones, a movie that I did rewatch recently that did not make our Fast Five, is They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
Mm-hmm.
This came out in 1969, directed by Sidney Pollack, and 9 Oscar nominations, including the first one for Jane Fonda. And this was a movie that sort of takes place at a dance marathon during the Great Depression. And it was an allegory, even though it takes place in the 30s, it was an allegory for the aimlessness of the 60s.
Yep.
And it is a powerful film. It is a turning point in Jane Fonda's career, coming just a year after Barbarella, which established her as a sex symbol.
Yeah, she really had those acting chops.
Exactly,
and Julia from 1977 kept that going because she was Oscar nominated for this role. Probably one of her most dramatic roles that she's done. She plays playwright Lillian Hellman during the 1930s, smuggling money into Nazi Germany for her friend, who's played by Vanessa Redgrave. And this was Meryl Streep's first film, I think.
Yes, it was. 1977. Yeah. Wow, amazing. Meryl Streep's first movie.
Yeah.
Crazy. And there's Jane Fonda.
And Vanessa Redgrave.
I love, you know, I mean, though it's fun. It's fun with Dick and Jane.
Yeah.
You know, no pun intended.
I haven't seen this one. I've seen the remake.
Oh, with the Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. This is the movie you want to see. And, yeah. You know, nothing too much at stake. I mean, it's sort of a post-Watergate, you know, the 70s, you know, with, remember the gas crisis and everything. A lot of people were struggling. And here's a well-to-do couple that lost everything and they had to resort to a life of crime. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. Jane Fonda, George Segal have a lot of good chemistry together. And it's, again, it's entertaining and it's a pleasure after heavy films like Julia, which came out the same year, to see Jane Fonda do a comedy.
Well, another one that's a lot of fun is Barefoot in the Park, 1967, with Dreamboat, Robert Redford. I mean, these two together, just so wonderful. And it's a romantic comedy set in New York, which is my favorite of all the romantic comedy types.
Yeah, in New York.
Man Up, which is in London, but everyone knows I'm obsessed with that. It's a really funny movie.
Eight times
I've seen that movie. And it's a really funny comedy, Barefoot in the Park, so it's one worth seeing again.
And it's also the first, not the first, it was one of three movies, and soon to be a fourth, that she is making with Robert Redford.
One
being The Chase and the third one being The Electric Horseman in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Really charming, really funny, good chemistry between the two of them based on the play by Neil Simon, who wrote the screenplay. And even though it's cheesy, I do love Barbarella.
I do as well.
Come on.
I mean, it's a cheesy. Sexy sci-fi spoof.
Very sexy.
What's not to love, but it's very much of its time.
Very much.
But it's so much fun.
I mean, I've seen Star Trek episodes that had better production values than this movie that came out in 1968.
I know, but it is so iconic for very good reason. So when you watch it, if you haven't seen it, then you'll get a lot of references that have been used after that about Barbarella.
And you will know where Duran Duran, the music group, got its name.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, finally.
But I also want to point out just a little another film, which she only appears in briefly, but it's a documentary, which I love, and I think it's important to see. It's called Misrepresentation.
Yeah. I had a feeling you were going to say that.
I love this documentary. It's about media and how it affects the self-esteem of young girls watching it when all they're given is images of sex symbols, of, you know, stereotypical characters, you know, of not even being on screen. And it looks at news and magazines as well as movies. And Jane Fonda appears and she speaks very eloquently about it. So it's definitely worth checking out.
What year did that come out? Because I know I saw it at Sundance.
I think it was like, 2013?
Yeah,
maybe?
It's a couple of years.
A couple of years ago. And it was one of the first movies I saw that really set me on my path to be like, all right, we need to talk about this. We need to change things. And
so in addition to all the movies that we are talking about. So yes, please go and watch Misrepresentation.
Yeah.
That is a movie that is absolutely—it's
an eye-opener.
Gains more relevance as the years progress.
Well, then we had our brackets.
Your brackets, yes.
On our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance, which this week were run by Steve Zissou.
Yay, Steve!
Justin. She won't tell anyone. They did the best performances by Jane Fonda, and it got down to Clute versus 9 to 5. Which one do you think got the winning vote?
Please say Clute.
It was Clute.
Yes. All right, good. Yes, it had to be Clute because she won an Oscar, her first.
Oh yeah, I mean, she has more of a role in that one, obviously.
Okay, now that brings us to our Fast Five, coming in at number two,
which is.
Yep, we're going to Ventana.
That's great.
Yeah, you got to be there at 1:30.
Wait, what about the crew? What about Richard Hector?
No, they'll pick you up and you can all drive up together.
Right. Okay.
The China Syndrome.
Uh-huh.
Whoa. Watching this movie, released on March 16th, 1979, directed by James Bridges. It cost $6 million to make. Box office was $52 million. 4 Oscar nominations, which seems a bit low given the power of this film. Original screenplay, art direction, actor Jack Lemmon, and actress Jane Fonda's fifth Jack Lemmon. What a performance in this movie.
Oh, I love
now,
him.
Here is a film where life imitated art.
Oh, yeah. I was reading about the Three Mile Island scare, which
That's
I didn't
right.
know anything about.
Okay. I knew all about it because Three Mile Island is 2 hours from Philadelphia.
Yeah, close
so when
to
this
you.
Happened, everybody in Philly lost their stuff. We were freaking out. I mean, everybody was, because it was a really, really big deal. 12 days after the release of this film, Three Mile Island had a potential meltdown, just like the one you see depicted in this movie. The worst accident in U.S. power plant history. It was rated 5 on the 7-point scale for international nuclear events.
Wow.
The movie was even pulled from some theaters.
Oh, really?
And it is a gripping movie, very, very intense, mm-hmm. and very, very real. And it is a powerful, powerful film. My favorite of all the films that we've been talking about so far today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really, really amazing. It's smart. Mm-hmm. It's scary as hell. It is a tension-filled paranoid thriller.
Mm-hmm.
More than the others, like definitely more than Clute. But it is just a news crew that is in the wrong place at the right time. And I love the scene when Michael Douglas, who produced the movie.
Yep, and plays the cameraman.
He's like, with the long hair and the beard, right?
Yeah,
and
love
this is
it.
Like, you know. But, you know, so they're up watching the meltdown happen, and she just motions to him, like, are you filming this? And you see him really subtly nod his head.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a great scene.
It's filled with great scenes. Great scene more towards the end with Jack Lemmon and Jane Fonda together.
Oh, yeah.
And they had such great chemistry at creating this friendship that develops over the movie. And during this time, Jane only wanted to make films which focused on important issues, and she turned down a role in An Unmarried Woman because she felt it wasn't relevant at the time. But for me, I really love the way this movie and also Coming Home, you know, they're obviously issues that she felt very passionate about, but she played characters who don't necessarily turn into rebels, activists on the front line, but they just change their perspective completely, and they change from start to end. So she starts out, as you heard that little bit, she's this, oh, great, up and go.
Yeah,
like, she does the soft news.
Lightweight stories.
You know, she's ambitious. She wants to do more, but she's quite happy just to have her job,
and
she's hardworking.
Gets her chance and has to prove not just to her bosses, but to herself.
But by the end, she doesn't care. She just is passionate about this. She wants the world to know the truth, and she just wants them to know that one way or the other. I just love seeing the passion that she has towards the end.
Watching The China Syndrome, because I watched this movie first and then went back to watch the others.
Yep.
So I'm sitting there watching this movie, and it occurred to me, what actress today reminds me of Jane Fonda back in those days?
Who do you think I'm thinking of?
Kate
Blanchett?
Amy Adams.
Oh, Amy Adams, because of the toughness and
the toughness in movies like, you know, the Fighter.
Yeah.
But also the they look very similar.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at Amy Adams now and you look at Jane Fonda like in the late 70s
That's
and early
true.
80s, they look very, very similar. And I mean that as a compliment to both of those actors.
Like, you could imagine Amy Adams if they did a remake of it today.
Absolutely. Yeah. If they did a remake of The China Syndrome.
I also love the way you watch how news was done back then, shot on film.
They go,
process this, and then it takes ages to process it. Whereas these days, it would be like, camera phone,
yeah,
tweet it,
yeah,
the news is out
there.
Yeah,
iPhone. They would have all that on their iPhone. But there's no score, which was a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Michael Douglas, as the producer, said, let's just go for the realism of this movie. And in his review for the New York Times in 1979, Vincent Canby said, the three stars are splendid, but Miss Fonda is more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Her performance is not that of an actress in a star's role, but that of an actress creating a character that happens to be major within the film. She keeps getting better and better.
Well, Roger Ebert says, Jane Fonda is simply superb as a TV reporter. The range and excellence of her performance is wonderful. Yeah, she's incredible.
It's a movie that, like, by the time it was over, I realized I had not been breathing for almost 2 hours because it's so intense.
Jack Lemmon.
The crisis of conscience that Jack Lemmon has in this movie.
About being a whistleblower.
I mean, he is so frigging great. And I'm thinking, we should do him on Profiles one of these days.
Oh, I love him.
That'd
should definitely
be awesome.
Take him. Well, Liam Logrand, I wanted to read his comment.
Australia!
Yay, Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. He says, over 35 years later, the China Syndrome has never felt more relevant than ever. Director James Bridges does an excellent job of addressing the dangers of nuclear power without beating audiences over the head with a cliched message associated with preserving the environment. However, at the end of the day, this is a truly fantastic film about investigative journalism. I can never say that word. That is elevated by Jane Fonda's incredible performance. Kimberly Wells is a layered and independent character that isn't oppressed by a male male-dominated working environment. True. She stands for feminism in a positive manner, and she's able to demonstrate to audiences the gender inequality gap evident in the entertainment industry. This film perfectly demonstrates why I love Jane Fonda for her strong female characters. Well said, Liam LeGrand.
Well said, Liam LeGrand. And Britton Dower says, I first saw The China Syndrome on the Turner Movie Classics channel. I was studying for an exam and just had the TV on in the background. I didn't get any studying done because the movie instantly captivated me. The tension jumps off the screen and I couldn't stop watching. Fonda is fantastic and has great chemistry with Jack Lemmon, who turned in a masterful performance as well. Both were Oscar-worthy nominees, but it's just too bad they had to go up against Kramer versus Kramer. Even though the statement the movie made feels a bit dated, the tension and potential danger still hold up in the movie. If anyone hasn't seen the film, especially if you're watching Profiles or listening right now, they should make it a serious effort to watch. Yes, please do so. Mm-hmm. And enjoy. Keep up the great work. Hashtag film geek. Hashtag profile for life.
Smile emoticon added on the end there. And Bill Pollahan, who's watching live, says, if you watch Jane Fonda movies, you'll grow to be fond of her. Now, I'm excited about this next bit, Scott, because I was away. We got this rare opportunity to sit down with the woman herself, Jane Fonda. I've been lucky enough to talk to her before, but I was jealous that you got to do it. But I said, Scott, you have to make this happen. Please go out there. And, of course, you did a wonderful job.
Well, this one was for you, Alicia Malone. I mean, you were there with me in spirit and and definitely right at the top of the show. I specifically said, this is Profiles with my co-host, Alicia Malone. Now, her movie is called Youth.
Yes.
The movie co-stars, or really stars, Michael Caine and Harvey Keitel, Rachel Weisz. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay.
I cannot wait.
You will love it.
I heard
Profilers
all about it.
Will love it. It is an exceptional film, a true work of art that reminded me of Fellini, an abstract movie. It is just nothing like it today. Amazing performances. It is a meditation on growing old, hence the title, Youth. Jane Fonda does not have a big role. It is not a huge role. But boy, when she comes in with her two scenes, she snaps it right out of from under everyone else. She steals this movie, and even though, again, it is a brief role, it is a substantial performance, one that she should get nominated for, and one that is a reminder, wow, she is still a force to be reckoned with, an amazing actress. So
well, you got a brief interview, but a substantial one.
I'll take it.
So here is the conversation with Jane Fonda. Roll it.
Scott Nance for Profiles. Jane Fonda, thank you so much for joining us on Profiles. Our show is really, you're what our show is all about. Me and my co-host, Alicia Malone, we profile the greatest filmmakers of all time. We celebrate their accomplishments. So thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with
us. I'm very honored that you consider me among that you've had already.
We couldn't wait to talk with you.
Oh my
gosh. You know, starting with Youth, what was it about Brenda? You know, this role, it doesn't have a whole lot of screen time, but it's such a rich character. What was it about Brenda that you just relished the chance to play her?
Paolo Sorrentino.
Yeah.
I accepted to do it before I ever read the scene.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to work with Paolo Sorrentino. I had seen Il Divo. I had seen The Great Beauty. It doesn't happen very often that you get to work with someone like him. I mean, he's unique. He's like Fellini or Antonioni. It's a very special kind of talent, almost surreal. He writes and directs and is very meticulous, and I just thought it would be a grand adventure. And then when I read the scene, I thought, yeah, this is good.
It's really good. I mean, there's a certain like a Nora Desmond-esque quality to her that is both riveting and heartbreaking at the same time. But, you know, just made me think back to just so many great performances in your career. And I know we don't have a whole lot of time. So I'm going to mention either a film or one of your co-stars. Mm-hmm. And I would love if you just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind, whether it's a moment, a favorite memory. So let's start with They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing that comes to your mind from the making of that film?
Oh.
That's a breakthrough performance.
It was the first time in my career, and I had made quite a lot of movies by then.
Yeah.
That I was making a movie that had something to say about what was happening in the world then.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was an existential novel about greed.
Moving on to 1971, Clute, Donald Sutherland. first Oscar. How special was that role, especially because, again, 1971, there was still a lot going on in the world?
It was not as sort of a social commentary as They Shoot Horses, Don't They? But it was a great role, multi-dimensional role of a prostitute. And I went into it thinking I wouldn't be able to do it, and then it was one of the great experiences to work with Alan Pakula.
Oh, he's just such a great, great filmmaker. Yeah. I really miss him as a filmmaker because I just watched
– it's a fantastic movie on every level, the music, the sound.
The performances.
Yeah, the cinematography.
I want to ask you about an actor who you've worked with quite a few times. You're about to work with him again.
Yes.
Robert Redford.
Right. He's my favorite. He's funny. He's very smart. We have such a history together. You know, we first worked together in the early 60s, and we both grew up here in Los Angeles. And we have a lot of things in common. We love solitude. We love the wilderness. We love horseback riding. And so I'm crazy about him. I always fell in love with him, every film we did together. Who knows?
Who knows?
A fourth film together now coming up.
Well, another film, and this is one that you really work closely, the development, that the screenwriter, this was a very, very important film for you. Tell me about Coming Home.
Ah. Well, I had worked for 3 years prior to making Coming Home with Vietnam veterans.
Yeah.
And active duty servicemen and their wives. And I had visited VA hospitals, and I wanted to make a movie that showed the reality of coming home from that particular war.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of what I learned is actually in the movie, in the script. And I'm very, very proud. And I feel so lucky that Hal Ashby directed it, that I had a chance to work with Hal Ashby.
I got to tell you, I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I've never listened to Strawberry Fields Forever the same way again after seeing that movie.
The way he used music in all his movies, but, you know, Cat Stevens in Harold and Maude, I've got goose flesh, which I saw recently, but he, you know, he was a genius. But what's so great about being an actor is that you get an opportunity to work with all these different people. They're all puppeteers, but they all have a different way of pulling the strings.
Yeah.
You know, Fred Zinnemann, who directed Me and Julia, would only do one take unless the camera broke.
Wow.
Hal Ashby would shoot 40 takes and print them all in the days when it was filmed. And then, you know, because he came from the world of editing, he would sculpt his film from bits and pieces of all the things that he printed. Hal Ashby was like a psychologist. He would burrow into the psyche of the characters that he was working with, and particularly had a sensitivity to women. You know, they're all different. And that's what's so – I feel so lucky to be in this profession.
Well, I feel so lucky to be in this profession as well, and I cannot thank you enough for joining us on Profiles.
Thank you.
This is a wonderful interview.
Thank you for having me.
Wow. You get a high five for that, Scott.
I get a high five for that. Hooray!
Yeah, you did so good.
What I love
She's
is like,
so
you know,
lovely.
She, you know, the top of the interview, it was the first interview of the day.
Oh, so yeah, you were the warm-up.
I was the warm-up, but she warmed up pretty fast.
Yeah.
And I just love that by the end of the interview, it was like, that was like the gold,
mm-hmm.
because she was really opening up and
She's
she was
just so
genuine.
Intelligent. She's very eloquent. I like that she really considers everything that she's saying.
Yeah.
Because her words have such power, and just to hear her speak about all the movies she's done, it's awesome to hear.
I just wanted to talk about China Syndrome because it was so close, literally, to home for me
mm-hmm.
when that happened, and I wanted to know her take on when Life Imitated Art, just 12 days after the movie released. But we'll have that conversation another time.
Yeah.
And yes, I mean, wait till you see Youth. You're going to love it.
Oh,
you're all going to love it.
It
loved is extraordinary.
The great beauty. I saw that at Cannes a couple of years ago, and I was just enthralled by it.
It's
so
fantastic.
I'm sure I will love Youth.
Well, now that brings us to number one on our Fast Five, which is, it has to be...
We never managed to talk about that, do we?
No, we don't.
Coming home, released December 15th, 1978, directed by Hal Ashby, cost $3 million to make, box office was $33 million, 8 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Director, 3 wins, original screenplay, Best Actor, John Voight, and Best Actress, Jane Fonda, her second. This is one of a slew of films about Vietnam that came out around that time. Mm-hmm. The Deer Hunter was that year. Following year after that was Apocalypse Now. This is a movie that still, has a lot to say.
Sure does. And once again, based on a concept conceived by Jane for her production company, you know, she wanted to make a film about the Vietnam experience. And like she was just saying in that interview about what it was like for soldiers to come home from that terrible war. And she had a friendship with Ron Kovic, who, of course, was played by Tom Cruise in Born on the 4th of July. So that influenced a lot of what she wanted to say, particularly about the VA hospitals. And again, similar to the China Syndrome, I love that her character, who starts out as this, you know, very proud military wife and then conservative, just doesn't quite understand everything that's going on, as many people didn't because it was shielded from view. And then working as a volunteer in the hospital, the things she sees and things she hears, it completely changes her beliefs. And then trying to deal with her new romance and then her husband coming back. I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a lot going on. And once again, just a brilliantly layered, complex character who has a huge journey without changing 180 degrees, if that makes sense. Yeah, she does, but she's not. It's not like a cartoonish version. It's very realistic and raw.
It's a raw film. It's an uncompromising film.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of attention goes to John Voight and Jane Fonda, obviously, because they won Oscars for their roles.
They're so good together.
But Bruce Dern is fantastic. The change that he goes through when he comes back, he has changed.
I know. If you've only seen him in Nebraska, you should definitely watch him in Coming Home.
Yeah, Coming Home is fantastic. And when he comes back, he's changed. Of course, she has changed. And she's got something going on. And the three of them together, even though they only really have one scene together, it is just acting at its finest. And even though this movie, it's a little hard to find. I had to watch it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how powerful it still is, even though it came out in 78. It's about Vietnam. And like the music, the soundtrack is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you had to mention the Beatles.
Of course.
Because you always do at least once. That should be another drinking game. You know, you should take an entire shot.
Every time I mention the Beatles.
But the music is incredible. I was thinking when I was watching this, and I'd never seen Coming Home. I'd heard about it. I had never watched it until this week. And I was watching it going, this soundtrack would be awesome.
Yeah, The Stones, Simon and Garfunkel.
every classic 70s song, 60s song.
60s
definitely.
And 70s. Roger Ebert said the movie is an extraordinarily moving film. Coming Home is great filmmaking and great acting at its finest. Interesting that Luke Martin, the character played by John Voight, the following actors turned that role down. Jack Nicholson, Al Pacino, Sylvester Stallone.
Stallone
turned down Coming Home.
And John Voight was so brilliant and very different to his character in Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, definitely.
So, I mean, shows his range, too.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, people think of John Voight differently now than they did. But back in the day, I mean, he was just one of the best actors of that time. And
definitely see it with this film.
Well, Rachel Cushing.
Yay, he's watching.
Always is such a great writer.
She's watching live.
Knows her movies. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
You're the best, Rachel. She said this about Coming Home, and I think perfect that she gets the last word because she says it so beautifully. Though there are many incredibly strong films about the psychological and emotional trauma caused by the Vietnam War, Coming Home is one of the most moving. As Sally, the wife of a Marine who goes off to fight, Jane Fonda perfectly portrays the slow growth of a conservative woman who didn't understand how to be herself outside of her marriage.
True.
When she learns to be independent and think for herself, she falls in love with the wheelbarrow chair vet Luke, played by John Voight. Their tragic love story is daring, beautiful, and heartbreaking as they save each other and learn to be stronger people. The film itself is an unflinching but respectful look at life for those affected by the war. But ultimately, it belongs to Fonda Sally as a woman who finds her inner strength to both love Luke and her husband as much as she can. It's a remarkable film that it was produced by Fonda herself, an outspoken anti-war advocate who nevertheless saw the importance of telling a story of how the war affected both its veterans as well as the people who loved them.
And even though it's about the Vietnam War, sadly, I think a lot of people could relate today.
Absolutely. They yeah. absolutely can relate today. And if you loved this episode of Profiles.
Oh, here we go.
This is it. I mean,
business time again.
It's just, what do you mean?
Quick business. To wrap it up?
Yes. Go first.
Okay. I'm jet lagged. Sorry. I'm just like, where am I? So quick business. You can subscribe, rate, review on iTunes for the audio podcast.
And you can go to youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork, subscribe to YouTube and share it with your friends.
You can go to our Facebook page, Profiles of Malone and Mance. Make sure you like it, participate in the brackets. It's so much fun.
And make sure you go to tpublic.com/user/profiles and get your brand spanking new Profiles t-shirts.
Whip, whip.
And finally,
go to Twitter at MovieMance. I was gonna
at MovieMance,
at Alicia Malone, at MovieMance, at Alicia Malone, pause, at MovieMance, at Alicia Malone. And we will finally recap our Fast Five. Number five was
9 to 5.
Number four,
Clute.
Number three,
On Golden Pond.
Number two,
The China Syndrome.
And number one,
Coming Home.
I closed my book.
The book is closed. The show is done. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until next time,
bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.